gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Matt Arazzo and Lucia Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We like to open up the broadcast with a little sports talk, a little Eagles talk. Steve Matarazzo?
Well, we got beat by the Giants, and my man Tommy Cutlets wasn't even playing, fellow Paisan. So I'm an Eagle fan, as we all know. Mr. Lucer.
He's a Giants fan.
I had to, run around in the office and hide after the loss.
Your dignity went down the tubes.
I have to tell you, I don't know what's wrong.
It's interesting.
But it looks like to me that this coach is overmatched.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And let me bring in Judge Brad Henson. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, we're going to continue on this conversation, Steve Lubscher.
So I'll tell you, as a Giant fan, at this point, when you have nothing to play for, you almost want the team to lose so that they could get the better draft pick.
On the other hand,
it felt good waxing the Eagles.
Well, I said something
on Sunday.
I said something, and I got a lot of play on Facebook. So I don't post anything personal except if on Facebook. It's mostly I'll promote the shows, but I have 4,990 Facebook friends. And sometimes you can go to my page, and I don't know anybody in the pictures.
You got to get those extra 10, Joe.
Right, I do. Well, as soon as I get there, I'm going to be Xing out the old, But anyway, I posted this, okay, and it was you can write it in different colors. This was poopy brown, okay, and that, So it said, thank God we pulled our starters or we would have lost by 50, okay? soon as we pulled the starters, the Giants let up a little bit. And, certainly speaking, like Steve, you said, there's so much to kind of unravel, because a couple weeks ago, last month, we were talking about our coordinators and it, how bad. But this has taken a whole new level. Like the 10-1 Philadelphia Eagles were the worst 10-1 team. But there was two schools of thought. We're either the greatest team in the history of sports who can just show up in the fourth quarter and win.
And flip the switch.
Right, flip the switch, or we got major problems. Well, we saw that we clearly have major problems. So where do we go from here?
Well, just to further emphasize the point, my colleague, Mr. Lucer, is also a Knicks fan, and he went to the Knicks game this week, in our tickets, and the Sixers got smoked.
He's feeling good, man.
So, so Lucer, I come in the other morning. I see Lucer. He's almost bald. I see this guy like lifting weights and sweating, and he looks like he's worked out after two wins by two of his teams. But so let me just say this to you, okay? And the Joel Embiid, who I think is a special player, is so selfish like the rest of the players in the NBA. He has to get his 30 points, whether they're winning by 50 or losing by 50. And then he's got to take a day off because he's got to hang now and he's getting paid all that money and he doesn't show up in the playoffs. So I got a real problem with Embiid and the Sixers. The Eagles, I feel bad for it in a roundabout way. I'm not sure why, but I do. They were a paper tiger. Anybody that was watching these games and then flipping the switch in the fourth quarter. Since the first Dallas game, when Prescott stepped out of bounds, They should have lost every game from there forward.
Yeah.
My little son could have caught that pass from Patrick Mahomes, and that game would have been a loss.
Oh, yeah.
So if the kicker doesn't kick in a 42 driving rainstorm.
60 yards.
Excuse me, 60.
No, 60-yard field goal.
Yeah, they're not in that. They lose that game. So this has been a slow wave that's been coming towards Philadelphia. Quite frankly, the fact that Baker Mayfield's going to smoke them this weekend is
going to put it to rest.
Yeah, it's going to. And you know what? We need to be put to rest because we need some major changes. Absolutely. We really do.
I can say one of the things that annoyed the crap out of me completely was I guess that last game we won by two. Who do we beat? I forget. But Nick Sirianni's jawing with the fans, right? Problem, I mean, so, and I think he said last week, he said slump, we're in a slump. And then he said, oh, I mean this, you know, mini slump. I mean, it's, you don't know if it's, and have you ever seen, by the way, Judge, your thoughts on this, if you, I'm not even sure if you're paying attention to
well,
it.
Well, I'm an Eagle fan. So let's just get that out of the way.
Right. Oh, me too, more than anything.
And I think everybody can see it. And we saw it early. I mean, Steve and I talked about it early when they were barely winning games. The Buffalo game, for example. Or, you know, this
Washington.
Washington. That shouldn't be happening. So what the Niners did is they exposed the lack of a game plan or to adjust. So instead of doing what everybody else had done to us, which was blitz Jalen, he would run out of the pocket, scramble around, people could get open, he'd make a play. So the Niners pulled back on the blitz. They blitzed way less when they clubbed us, and he had to stay in the pocket. They rushed 4-2 up the middle, 2 deep. And so when he ran out of the pocket, if you start noticing the games now, when he actually tries to run out of the pocket, he's running back 5-10 yards back. Backwards.
Yeah.
And they're forcing him backwards so he can't throw it as far. And they're challenging him to stay in the pocket and throw the football to the third read, and he's not doing it.
Well, I'm looking at a lot of the things going on, first of all, we don't have an underneath game. Quick slants are not an underneath game. That's a timing pattern. Okay, how many more are those screen passes, step back screen passes? Are we going to continue? I mean, we don't have an underneath game. So our coaches clearly don't have, they're not adjusting and they don't have an underneath game, number one. Number two, I've never seen a quarterback in my entire, so I heard recently he's hurt. And let's just, you know, he's more hurt than we think. But let's think about this for a second. If you run the run pass offense, the option, the RPO, it's not a run pass option if they know you're hurt. So now that doesn't count. So your running backs are now going to be less effective because there is no option. There's no chance. Okay. But at the same time, you know, like what 2 weeks ago, who do we got smoked against the Cardinals, the worst run defense, and we didn't run until the second half. So when you look and defensively, we've got no pass rush, like none. So the question is, and I know there's talent there.
Well, and I'll tell you, just from watching the game and watching a little bit of breakdown of the game, the coaching, and you have Matt Patricia now calling the defense, who they brought in the middle. Matt Patricia, who was the horrible head coach of the Lions. Then last year he was calling offensive plays, I think, for Belichick and the Patriots. Now you bring him in the middle of the season to call defense. He had, on the first play of the game, Hassan Reddick, who's your best pass rusher.
In coverage,
in no man's land. And, you know, as a Giant fan, they had Tyrod Taylor, the backup quarterback.
Who looked good, by the way.
Yeah, who's a legit ball player. He rolled out to the right. Reddick's in no man's land, and they hit an open pass to Slayton. And I think that was kind of just a microcosm of the rest of the game. Giants outcoached them.
Oh, yeah. And I just we're in such disarray. And I don't think Nick Sirianni took it seriously until recently. And now he's got, you know, we lose this game, he'll be gone, you know, the day after the game.
Well, I tell you, I think you should be right, but I'm not sure you're right that they'll get rid of him. But you know how they'll get rid of him? If they get beat like the 49ers beat him. That was embarrassing.
The good thing for them, though, is that Tampa, I think, scored 9 points against Carolina this past weekend. So if you're going to get right or get healthy in the playoffs.
We got the best pick. I mean, we fell in the best playoff spot, no question.
And speaking of the Panthers, I saw today that Brian Johnson, the offensive coordinator of the Eagles, is interviewing for the head coaching job.
What's interesting about that is this. What's interesting is that he may be a 10 times better head coach than he is an offensive coordinator, because he may be a great manager. Like, he may be able to manage personnel and all that. You get a great offensive coach and let that guy do what he needs. Just, you don't have much to do with the offense at that point. So I can see, you know, obviously the guy was a good quarterback coach. He coached, Hurts. And he at Oklahoma.
He coached at Florida.
And Dak Prescott also. So the guy's got skills. He's just clearly not a game manager number one.
It's tough. I mean, when you look at coaches, I played college football.
Division one, by the way.
I can tell you it does matter. The head coach needs to be an authoritative figure that knows the game, knows every part of the game, not just a little bit of the game.
Right.
So, like, you know, you look at Andy Reid. He knows the whole thing. He does. You look at the coach for the Detroit Lions. He has that locker room. He has command of the entire team. The one they just fired from Tennessee was a shocker for me.
Yeah.
They fired Vrabel. I mean, that's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. I mean, the man had control and command and respect of the players, and they never showed up and laid an egg. You didn't see him lay an egg when they got beat.
Oh, I like Vrabel.
When you look at a head coach anywhere, but in the NFL particularly, that head coach has to have the knowledge of the game and have the respect of the locker room and the players. And, you know, right now the question is, does the head coach of the Eagles have that? Does he have that control? Can he control that locker room? Can he get it done? And I don't – you know, Doug Peterson, I mean, Howie, you take Howie. They won't hesitate. I mean, he's probably, I would think, the only manager that has actually fired – Super Bowl coaches and Hall of Fame coaches have been fired.
But you mentioned Andy Reid. An interesting point about Andy Reid, he was never a coordinator. He was a position coach, and they saw his leadership capabilities.
Right. That is interesting.
And so, literally, if you're a good manager of people, I guess what I'm saying is this guy Johnson may do, but clearly he's not doing well as an offensive coordinator.
Well, I'll also tell you, from my knowledge of him as the Florida offensive coordinator, he came up with Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen was the Florida coach. Dan Mullen was his offensive coordinator when he coached at Utah for Urban Meyer, and Brian Johnson was the quarterback. So really, it was Dan Mullen's offense. Dan Mullen was the one, I think, that was calling the plays. I don't think that Johnson was ever really calling the plays. I think that, like you said, he has good relationships with players. He knows how to play quarterback. He was a good quarterback's coach. But I don't know that he's calling the plays this year. I don't know if it's him or Sirianni, but it is Sirianni's offense. It's interesting.
You know, and the other thing, if you look at the Eagles this year, no motion. I mean, we're going in motion four times a game, five times a game. You can't do that at the pro level. You know, come out and line up your best guys in the same position time after time after time after time. That's super easy to prepare a defense for. You got to use motion.
You need deception. You need to be setting up plays. There has to be an underneath game. We've called – there have been some bonehead plays of epic proportions. When Hurts didn't go out of bounds, a couple of weeks ago, and they called the penalty on – who was it? It was the game we won by two. We got incredibly lucky. A lot of things, that just don't make sense. And by the way, the Dallas Cowboys, they're not turning it on at the end. I was thinking, right now who
49ers.
Okay, I agree with. Before I get into that though, real quick, what if we eke out one? Let's really get nasty. What if we eke out one with the Bucks, but we get crushed the next week?
You mean by San Francisco?
Yeah, we're going to get crushed.
We're going to get killed.
So what I'm saying is Sirianni's fate sealed no matter what?
I don't think so. I think you win a playoff game, you're coming off a Super Bowl, runner-up year. I don't think that he's fired.
I'm going to disagree with him.
Yeah.
And the judge said something that's very important. I know we're talking about sports, but we're going to get to workers' comp in a second. And a locker room is no different than a courtroom. If that judge does not have respect from the attorneys that appear before him or her. Then they run amok on that judge. This judge was a judge for 20 years, and he didn't put up with anything from anybody.
Well, here's an interesting point, Judge. What about if the – I've heard this, though. As the judge, if you have an attorney that run, you know, that loses respect from the judge, I've heard of judges that, you know, obviously are real sticklers for procedure and all that. What happens – and I don't know if you've ever run into this situation in work comp, but I have asked this question before. If you see somebody who, here's a good one. Imagine I am a general practice attorney, okay? And somebody hires me, and I'm in that room, and I don't know anything about what's going on, or else I think I do, but I'm and I might even be showboating a little bit, but don't understand. And now you are 100% aware that that client, that person's client is not getting a proper representation. And it, you know, and it's a, what do you call it? What a lack of counsel or
ineffective assistance of counsel.
Exactly. You've just lost respect for that attorney representing that client. You're impartial, but you see that.
He can't let that happen. In our court, unlike other courts, I'm going to let him explain since he's the judge, not me, but he has to, as he said before in prior shows, every settlement has to be approved by the judge. That doesn't happen in Superior Court. The lawyers can do it, sign off on it. Every comp case has to be approved by a judge. So if a tax lawyer comes into comp court and is getting worked, believe it or not, he has, that judge sitting right there, Judge Henson, has the obligation to make sure that settlement is fair, reasonable, and just to all parties.
That's true. And so, you know, when that does happen, say you get a showboater, and I've had quite a few.
Making up for their lack of experience.
That, you know, and I get them from out of state, trial lawyers thinking they can come over here and dabble in comp, and, you know, they come over and showboat a little bit, and it's pretty simple. We just sit them down. I explain it to them and tell them what they have to do and tell them to knock it off. And, you know, and tell them this is what you're going to do and this is how you're going to do it. So for me, it was easy. I guess, you know, I'm a big guy and they just listen to me in that regard.
Have you ever had to lift an attorney and say, you know, I could say, listen, this isn't your field and you're not doing a good job?
I've told attorneys, I said, the workers' comp, and this goes to this firm. This firm right here, all they do is workers' comp, 24 hours a day. And I can tell you, Steve, 7 days a week, Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, he's answering the phone. They're doing these things. This is all the staff in here. This is why I'm here. I wanted to be at a place that just does this. And we're very, very good at it. So that makes it easy. You try to dabble in comp in New Jersey. I don't care if you're a trial lawyer. I've seen trial lawyers go down in flames in a trial in comp court. The judge can control the flow of the evidence. The judge controls everything. There's no depositions. It's a real chess game.
It's also one of the only areas of law where your certification is required. You know, not required, no. But, you know, there's a certification that says I'm a specialist.
You can get that. And look, as far as, and I'm a master of the bench. Both these guys are in the inner court. You can get a certification. The truth is, I don't know how Steve's been trying. I mean, he must have tried how many cases, Steve? I'm just trying, you know, I mean, hundreds. I don't even, you don't even know. If they ask me, it's like, you know, 100, 500 plus. Loopshire's the same kind of experience. When you practice this way, and that's what you do, that's what you want.
I mean, you respect that.
Oh.
Well, so, but think about the analogy we're talking about right now. So I got that. Now, this is, now I get it. When Sirianni started off, he had some hiccups. Forget exactly what he did. I think one time he called a timeout, and he kicked something crazy. Right?
How about his first interview? He's like a clown in the first interview with the Philadelphia media.
With the flower blooming, and I remember that.
Yeah, but, it's like a clown.
Yeah, he picked the wrong place. But you know what? We can overlook a clown if you're winning. But now, all of a sudden, the honeymoon's over. And what I think, when I think of pro sports, right? And Eli Manning would be, speaking of Giants, a great example of this. But it's a great example, but so would Michael Kendricks. You remember Michael Kendricks? He spent his first night in Philadelphia at my nightclub. It was a Thursday, or it was a Wednesday or Thursday night. It was hardly anybody in the room. Mm-hmm. And he came in. And I remember looking at the guy going, he looks like a D-back. But I remember we needed linebackers like we needed, I mean, air. And so on the Super Bowl team that we, you know, when we won the Super Bowl, he was not starting. He was a second, and this is relevant to every area. He was, but he made some great plays because he could run, and he was a great, he was a starter for a while. It didn't really work out, but he really did well as a backup, right? He, you know, I remember he caught somebody, you know, he made a game-saving play in the playoffs where he caught somebody going, you know, he caught somebody else wouldn't have caught because he was really fast. Well, on paper, at the end of the year, we get rid of him, right? Because that's what you do. Eli Manning over. You got the new guy, right? Okay, that's it. You know, now Eli Manning was the end of the career, but he's a Hall of Famer. But at the same time, you know, they make these moves. So like last year, we got rid of Hargrove, right? Because we got the two big guys coming in, right? On paper, it looks good, but it changes the chemistry of the team. Maybe, you know, and it happens in all sports. You make these moves. They look good. We can easily replace this person with this person. And now, all of a sudden, the chemistry of the team changes. We don't have Hargrove. By the way, Hargrove, it was in there plenty of times when we were getting rolled. He isn't that great against the run, but damn, is he good against the pass. So you gotta pick it. But now we have a different chemistry. Now our head coach went from a learning period, which, you know, the goofy interview and all that stuff at the beginning, you can overlook as you're going up. But here we are six, seven, eight games ago, and we're all sitting here waiting for the adjustment, okay? We've already been to the Super Bowl. This guy ain't a rookie no more. And now his career, because he's such a goofball, you know, arguing with fans, okay? Who does that? Could you see Bill Belichick doing that or Andy Reid? Because he's juvenile. He's immature. Okay, now I'm not saying he doesn't know football, but, you know, things have changed. The chemistry's changed. The coaching staff has changed, and he cannot adjust.
I agree. Agreed. This last game with the Giants, I was telling Steve Lupcher.
We won that game, didn't we?
Yeah, right. And we weren't tackling. I mean, we're trying to hit people with shoulders. They're not doing the fundamental things. Absolutely. And the other thing is Steve and I were talking about, they look tired. They don't look like they're in shape. Yeah. In the fourth quarter, they're barely running. They're not pursuing with speed. They look like they have nothing in the tank.
Well, it looks to me like he's the kind of coach that yells when things are going badly. So, in other words, he's in a panic now, right?
Right.
And it's in a place where he's never been. What he said last week was, we're in a bit of a slump. You know, he said slump and then try to – you don't have to butter it up for me, brother. I know what we're in. And at the by the way, I like the Giants coach. He seems like a solid guy, you know. I mean, and look, another
they're having some upheaval in their room.
Oh, this week, too. Yeah.
Yeah, because the defensive coordinator, he kept the defensive coordinator, but fired his right hand man, who was the outside linebacker coach. Apparently, there was some there were some inner turmoil within the coaching staff. So the defensive coordinator, who called a hell of a game plan against the Eagles. Yesterday they said, called Daboll, who's the Giants head coach, called him an MF-er and got on a flight to Sarasota. Today I think it's official that they're broken up now, that we're looking for a new defensive coordinator. But I respect Daboll because he has to have command of the entire building. And if you have certain coaches or certain players that aren't going to follow, you know, the path that the head coach sets –
it's no different.
It's going to undermine.
It's no different than any business that you're in, whether it's a courtroom, a locker room, or a law firm. I used to be at a law firm where we lost respect for the leader. We left.
It's interesting you say that because leadership and success, okay, go hand in hand. And I tell this to labor leaders when I do. So I'll be in a broadcast, right? And one of the things that I love about Steve Lubscher more than anything is this broadcast is, what, 3-4 hours? Steve will be there to the end. No, Steve, I know you got to go. I know. But before I do, I want you to tell us about your childhood starting at kindergarten.
It's not all that interesting.
But before we go, just that, you know, any closing words? I know you got to rock and roll, but I do appreciate, you know, you sticking around and being a part of the broadcast.
No, that's no problem. Family obligations. I want to give a quick shout out to my father-in-law, Mr. Hanny. It's his birthday today. So
We're taking happy birthday.
Out. So, you know, he'll be happy to, I'll make sure he listens to this, but.
Well, is he an Eagles fan or a Giants fan or probably a Cleveland fan, right?
Not much of a sports guy.
Okay. Lucky him.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have that anxiety.
Exactly. A lot less stress for him on Sundays and Saturdays.
Oh boy. Well, and so having said that, you know, we I don't even know where I was. Where was I?
We were starting a kindergarten for me.
Oh, we were starting a kindergarten. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. We'll have more from the Matarazzo and Luigi show in just a minute.
Suffering a work injury in New Jersey can be devastating, both physically and emotionally. Trying to navigate the New Jersey workers' compensation system on your own can make it even worse. From the point of injury to the culmination of your claim and everything in between, the New Jersey Workers' Compensation Specialists at Matarazzo and Lubcher will handle every facet of your New Jersey Workers' Compensation matter to ensure that you get the representation and results you need in the face of a state system that often treats injured workers like they don't matter. If you get injured at work in New Jersey, call the workers' compensation firm of Matarazzo and Lubcher at 856-843-8403 or go to www.mlworkerscomplaw.com and get the support, the representation, and results you need to get your life back together.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Matarazzo and Luigi show here on WWDB Talk 860. We're going to be talking some Jersey comp in a second, but shout out to Steve Lubcher who had to rock and roll. But one of the things that's I was talking about, what, you know, these head coaches, the personalities, right? When I go into to do a labor show, I'll be talking to we talk about leadership and Judge, you had talked about this firm, and so I have had the pleasure of knowing Steve for almost, I guess, a year. There's really great leadership here, and there's a chemistry that works, okay? And that's because, you know, Steve here understands everybody's personality. And by the way, he's successful. I've had other attorneys come to me that are Jersey comp attorneys to talk about how good you are. And so... So there's leadership here that allows us to run at a certain level. I always talk about labor leaders when I'll go in, and my father was a labor leader for a long, long time. And the thing about my dad was he was all about the organization. He was not. It wasn't selfish. It wasn't about him. It wasn't. And the men and the women can deal. They can understand that. Okay. So when you gotta, you know, get out a can of whoop butt, guess what? They know it's not because you're trying to. You know, make all the money and do all this and be the big star. No, it's because of the organization. Sometimes you got to make tough decisions, all those things. There's the boss right there, Michelle Matarazzo in the house. You want to jump in there? You want to get on a broadcast? Come on. Come on, sit down. So, but my point is, you know, they understand that the leadership factor is about the organization. Now, you know, leadership is tested under, I'll show you right here. In fact, you know what? One second here, right there. And so I think that Nick Sirianni's leadership is in question, in my opinion. I think there's a major issue there. And, you know, I think that with all this stuff, I mean, it's so, like, what you said at the beginning of the show, Steve, you don't really know. Guess what? That's what it's dwindled down to. We don't really know. Like
I don't think anybody knows what's wrong with this team.
I mean, a month ago, it was about the offensive and defensive coordinators. Now, I can't tell you.
Well, so, the coach should be able to adjust for this. And it's like in this firm, you take this firm, and Steve's right there, you know, and Michelle, who runs the office.
That's right.
You know, when a case comes in, usually he's on it right away. So it starts here at the top with these two and Steve Lubcher, and they run it down all the way through to every little detail. I can tell you right now, I was home sick on a Saturday, and Steve called, And he had a client on the phone that called at, like, you know, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night or a Sunday night. He was here, took the call, went through the file, made sure it was done correctly, made sure his concerns were alleviated. So when you, you know, that's the leadership of the firm. You know, I'm just a judge of counsel, and, you know, I look at what he does and how they run this place, and I can tell you the clients are very well served. I don't know of any other firm where a lawyer's in on Saturday and Sunday at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and signing people up and talking to people.
And I've seen firms where they put a lot of work in, there's a lot of talent, but their intake is screwed up. And you're sitting there going, man, you know, so in other words, that leadership, you know, has to be, there's got to be common sense involved in Brussels. Let me bring the boss in, Steve. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing well.
First of all, it's great to have you on the broadcast. Listen, we're just having fun here, okay? Tell me, you know, we're talking about leadership, okay? And you know, talk about, you know, that this was a major undertaking. This firm's growing. Talk about your role in the firm and really, in a sense, how proud you are that things are growing at the rate they are.
Working with Steve, I've realized that he is insane.
Nice.
By the way, this is a husband. This is a husband and wife. I don't think I've ever had my. But I'll tell you what, though, you guys. It's what's great is that, you know, I mean, you guys are passionate about the firm and you're growing. By the way, how is it work? Well, I already kind of got that read. How is it working together? You know, as a husband and wife, Steve. I'll go with
you. Well, it's really funny that you say that because. I think I'm a good lawyer, but I did nothing in terms of establishing in this firm. My wife opened the 6 offices. My wife incorporated the place. My wife got our accountant, our lawyer. Our wife was the one that wanted to hire Judge Henson. It was her suggestion. She hires the entire staff. She does everything. What I do is I help people. Mm-hmm. That's my job. So it's funny. We don't talk much during the day because I'm usually on court and focused and talking to Brad and Steve. So she kind of does her thing.
Do you have a background? Did you have a background in law and law firms before you guys started it, or business?
I was the general manager of a restaurant years ago where I was Steven's boss.
Really?
That's
really
true,
32
actually.
Years ago.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And I was a teacher. I taught 6th grade.
Okay. I'll tell you what. A restaurant, which I owned one. Okay. I owned a nightclub and a restaurant. And by the way, that is a business that never sleeps. Okay. And did you use any of your, you know, I mean, you're listening to Steve and talking about accrediting you for, you know, the growth of the firm and doing all those things. Do you use a lot of those skills that you had with the restaurant to?
That and teaching. You have to be very organized.
When you go to make a decision, how's that conversation?
Actually, it's funny that you asked that question. I don't get involved in any of the administrative decisions in the law firm. I'm a lawyer. I'm not interested in running my law firm. I'm interested in talking to the clients, going to court every day, and helping them.
But the vision, this place, in other words, you just, you know, in other words, you know, you're growing and it's Michelle's vision to grow in a different area.
Yeah, we talk about Brad's part of that discussion, the judge here and Steve. But, you know, I'm more worried about helping people day to day, so I don't get involved in the administrative things in the law firm. I leave that up to Mr. Lucher and her. My commitment, and yeah, I was here on Christmas. I was here on New Year's. And interviewing clients. And this business, workers' compensation, we're going to talk about some things in a few minutes. It's people working 24/7. The guy that's delivering for Wawa or a friend that my client that was here last time, Stroman Bakeries in the middle of the night, these people get hurt. And they need somebody to talk to.
But what's interesting about the chemistry that you're talking about, this is my best friend is in the hospital right now. And he's improving, but he's had... You know, literally speaking, he's got a heart problem, and he's been on, it's just been terrible. He was at a hospital it want another hospital. That hospital couldn't handle the situation, so they were smart enough to say, you know what, we got to send us somewhere else. Sometimes, Steve, by the way, okay, certainly the recognized leader of the firm, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's knowing what your strong points are and what are not your strong points, and having a chemistry. That is an important part. There's plenty of people taking their businesses down the tubes because they don't know what they don't know. But if you can understand, okay, this is my strength and my strength, you know, and that's why I said head coaches, a lot of times they may not know, they may not be the best football guy or whatever, but your strong suit is the legal. And guess what? You know it, and you are strong enough to defer. So
when we opened this firm, we came from a firm that was very poorly managed.
Okay, that's it.
And Mr. Lubscher and I decided that we want to be good people. We're not just good lawyers; we're good people. I'm like a person, really.
Yeah.
And if you asked any of the people that work with us, they don't work for me; they work with us. I couldn't function without these people here. And Brad says that every day. We're people. We're not just lawyers. And people say, "Well, I only hurt my finger. So what?"
Well, let me ask Michelle.
Want to help you?
The people. So somebody's answering the phone, okay? And we always say that's the face of the place, right? Okay. How when you look at the practice and okay, you got great lawyers, but there's other factors in the firm that are important. And for example, the intake would be something. Is that something that, you know, you're at least aware of and in regards to, okay, right now we're doing a radio show, somebody might be answering the phone and
go ahead. I think that the girls that came with us are, like Steven, very passionate about taking care of the client. The girls that I interview and hire, guys that I hire, passionate about the law. And I think that's what I look for, someone that wants to talk to the client. Not hide behind a computer screen.
Well, it's interesting you say that because that culture, to me, is really where it's at.
Let's start with the premise that most of the time the clients aren't even signed up by a lawyer in other law firms. Okay, you're signed up by me, Steve Lubscher, or Judge Henson, period. Okay? You sign up with me, I'm your lawyer, for better or for worse, like a marriage.
True, but let me say this. Somebody calls that phone. If you have somebody who's a raving lunatic and doesn't care and doesn't exude what you guys represent, and I've seen it. I've seen it up close. I did a marketing effort one time with a firm, there was an individual who was answering the phone on this. Now, I had a great marketing guy, and by the way, every call was recorded. And it was pathetic. The actual marketing guy said to me, "I'm going to lose this account because they don't have somebody who can answer the phone properly." So here you are with this firm, all these people, right? And but you are, especially, you know, you're dealing with people who are, you know, tragically hurt a lot. They have to exude, you know, some qualities that represent what you are, you know, as leadership are trying to get across.
Correct. And I think, you know, we have Spanish assistance, which is very important in our business. But what we have tried to do here, unlike the place I was at before, is we've tried to breed a culture of what I feel, which is
exactly
we're here to help you.
But Michelle, you said that in the hiring process, though, that's what you look for in the hiring process. It starts because if you get a dud in here, you can teach whatever you want. Eventually, you're not going to be looking, and they're going to treat somebody like crap. And by the way, somebody created something called Google reviews, right? Mm. You have to make sure. Talk about that interview process and what you look for, because that's where it all starts.
Primarily, since we're growing so fast, we are looking for experience. So workers' compensation experience is important. Someone that comes in, I can tell their personality. I did a lot of hiring, a lot of firing in my past, teachers also, you can tell when you interview someone whether or not they have the personality to work with people.
Right.
And that's, I think that's the...
See, the issue is, and we've talked about this before, there can be multiple capacities to a case. There can be an orthopedic injury, such as I hurt my shoulder, I hurt my back. There can be a neurologic injury. I'm a school teacher. I slipped and fell in the water in the hallway, and I have a post-concussion syndrome. There can be a psychiatric component of a case. I'm representing a gentleman now that was a security guard at a school, and there was a gunfight outside. Represent a gentleman that was involved in a truck accident where somebody died. So there's multiple capacities to a case, and you have to be able to understand where they're coming from. A lot of people live paycheck to paycheck, and when they don't get their workers' compensation check, and they do, they call, they get upset, they yell. But you got to understand, this is their life, and they got to pay their bills.
It's stressful.
Bills, yeah. It's very stressful.
Well, I once talked to a work comp attorney in Philadelphia who was representing somebody, and this person was so stressed out. It didn't matter how much they knew about the law or where they came in their law, at their law school. Like if they were in the top five, this person did not. There's a business to this. I'm retaining clients and making sure. Let's do this. We're gonna segue into this conversation. Michelle Matarazzo, we thank you so much for dropping by and joining us on the broadcast, and keep up the good work.
And by the way, just as a disclaimer announcement out there, we are always looking for qualified people. That includes attorneys. That also includes legal assistants, and if anybody's interested, we're here to interview them and see if they can join the team.
Awesome. By the way, I heard they always say there's no dumb question. Sonny Banks said to me one time, and I know you know Sonny, he said to me, he was talking about the young people that have you go in, and he said, sometimes you feel like you're being interviewed. The one question, how times have changed, he said, what is the work-life balance, right? I mean, I can't.
I hate that question.
I know it's a horrible question. It's the one question where I'd suggest to my kid, that is not a good, here's my answer to that question. When you're done to work, you can go enjoy your life, but we're working. You should be enjoying your life working. But my point is that the most ridiculous question?
Yeah, it's a culture issue.
I know it's it's today's. What is this generation? What or
Z?
I think it's Z.
Yeah,
I think it's Z.
It's crazy. But thank you, yeah. Thank you, Michelle. By the way, has anybody ever asked you that question?
Yes, a lot of times it's the question whether or not you're in the office, or can I do a hybrid?
Well, by the way, we're going to segue right into that conversation. By the way, we only have 11 minutes.
Wow.
Let's get to it.
So
before we segue into that, I'll do this very quickly because it's interesting. Joe, you were born here, raised here, and will die here, and so why? And I just have to say this. Credibility is a huge issue in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I hear one more newscast about snow that doesn't happen.
Oh, boy.
It is incredible that these people get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
And they impact a lot of stuff.
Businesses, okay, to throw this slop out there when it never happens, and they now they name them like hurricanes, okay? These people, I would be out of a job if I had their credibility and accuracy, just to make a clear statement.
Well, it's a good point. Has anybody seen, it's like a reel, it's on reels or, on TikTok, but you got the two newsmen, right? And it's raining out there, and it's windy, and they're standing there, and they're like acting like they're in a big hurricane, and the two guys walk by behind them.
I've seen it.
It's one of the funniest.
It's a Weather Channel thing.
Oh my God!
It's in this Philadelphia area, which is again, you and I will never leave here. They mention a flake of snow, and everybody runs to the grocery store like it's Armageddon. And these clowns at these networks, that affect businesses. That my people want to stay home when they listen to this stuff.
Well, it's interesting you say that, and I absolutely agree. You know, if you know, you talk about the credibility and all that, and it's hype like there's no tomorrow, and it changes the world. How many businesses have been impacted by storms? I don't want to say this, by the way, we've had bad storms, so I'm not saying we shouldn't pay attention. But damn, like, how, you know, I mean, literally speaking, livelihoods, you know, jobs, all kinds of stuff on the line, and people are all staying home, and it doesn't happen. Well, it is what it is. But Michelle mentioned something about working from home. Now, let me throw a scenario at you. I'm working at remotely because that's where the kids want to work now. Okay, what's the work-life balance, right? Okay, I am working at home. I'm a lawyer, or I'm a you know, any kind of, you know, real, it could be anything these days. It could be construction work. I don't know how that works, but you know, you're working, you're doing a Zoom, but you're digging a ditch. I'm being sarcastic. Somebody gets injured at their house. Okay, trips and falls. Okay, is that a work comp case?
Okay, so let's talk about this, because let's remember something that's very important. Just because the insurance company tells you it's not workers' comp doesn't mean squat in my world. Yes, the world has changed. So if you're a claims adjuster, that I represent one, and she's going to her car because she's working from home, and she lifts her computer and she hurts her back, it's workers' compensation. If me, Steve Matarazzo, is in my house during COVID and I am working and I come out of my, I'm walking out of my library and I fall with my computer in my hand, it's workers' compensation. But more importantly, these Biada nurses, let's talk about these Biada nurses, okay? Because they're getting screwed, okay? If you're a Biada nurse and you're at Joe's house and you're driving to Judge Henson's house and you get in a car accident, it's workers' comp. You know what they tell you, the insurance? No, it's not. Now, we have a case law, we call it the coming and going rule, okay? Which basically says if Judge Henson is driving to my office or to court and he's involved in a car accident, it's not workers' compensation. But if Judge Henson is driving from this office, working with us, to my Hamilton Township office near Trenton, and he's involved in an accident, it's workers' compensation. But they also tell realtors that they're not covered. They're independent contractors. No, that's not true. There's a case right on point. So just because an insurance company tells you it's not workers' compensation doesn't mean it's so. That's why you need proper counsel. And injuries at home now are more prevalent than they were before COVID, because people are working from home. And if you get injured at home, it's workers' comp if you're doing the course and scope of your employment, period.
Now, even on a – so here's another thing. So say you're here and you have so many breaks. You can get coffee. You can go get coffee, whatever you want to do. So if you're home and you're just taking your normal break and you're walking to the kitchen to get coffee and you slip and fall and you hurt yourself, that's workers' comp. But they will not think it's workers' comp. So Steve's right. If you're working from home and they're listening out there and you get hurt at home during the course of your work day at home, don't assume at all that it's not work-related. Reach out, call the firm, and give the facts to Steve so they can be properly evaluated.
Also, you're the Verizon guy, and you say to yourself, you know what, I want to stop at Wawa and get a cup of coffee. And you get out of the truck and you slip and fall on the ice and you blow your rotator cuff. Workers' comp. Now, they will tell you, oh, it's a major deviation from the employment. That is bull squat. Now, there's a case, and Judge and I know this, a woman went on her break and went to the top of the building and smoked a cigarette and lit her hair on fire. Well, that's not going to be workers' compensation. But we have what's called minor and major deviations. So just because the insurance company tells you it's not workers' comp doesn't mean it's so.
But let me ask you, Judge, if this case came before you, okay, hypothetically speaking, okay, and since it's not at the office, it's not a standard, do you, what, how does it change the dynamic of a case when it's, because this has to be new case law.
The employer controls everything. So if, you know, the employer allows someone to work from home, they can set the parameters of that work from home. They can provide the equipment. They can say where you'll be at home, how you'll do it at home, make sure you're safe. So the employer does have some control. They can set the breaks. So you can take a break from this period to that period, so on and so forth. So there is some control from the employer.
But imagine I'm at the computer, okay?
Right.
Then I'm at the computer, and in the middle of it, my little son, okay, takes a bat, a little bat, and puts it, and he's got it, you know, and you know, your spouse might be there, and, oh, don't go near the computer, your mommy or daddy are working, right? But drops the bat right there, because they got, now the person gets up to use the restroom, which they're allowed to do, and slips on that bat and hurts their back.
Workers' compensation.
Workers' comp.
Okay.
Workers' comp. I agree with Steve.
Unequivocally.
100%.
Yeah, no, and now, how, now what challenges would you anticipate? I mean, no more than normal, because it's no one's sitting there and throwing, you know, making it easy for anybody, but damn.
Well, it depends who the attorney is on the other side. Again, I always say I want a very experienced attorney that knows what they're doing. It also depends upon who the judge is. I want a judge who's very authoritative, like Judge Henson. You know, just like we have politics, conservative, liberals, same thing with judges. We have judges that look at things different ways. So I personally want a commanding judge and an attorney that knows what they're doing. Because if you know the law, then you'll know the case is compensable. I'm litigating a case right now in the Mount Holly Workers' Compensation Court on a fraud issue. This case should never be litigated on a fraud issue. My guy didn't commit fraud, but I have a very young attorney on the other side, so I got to play the dog and pony show with him.
So having said that, is there... These obviously are new types of injuries. Okay, I mean, obviously before the pandemic, no one worked at home. Is it something that insurance companies, you know, overwhelmingly almost don't even acknowledge?
No, you know what? They are acknowledging, because the insurance companies used to have office buildings where they stuck attorneys and stuck claims people. They got rid of the office buildings because they're saving money. So all these lawyers and all these insurance people are working from home, so they kind of get the concept. Now, if you're working from home and there's 5 inches of snow on the ground, you get up from your computer and you go out and shovel the snow and you get hurt. That ain't going to work. Okay, that's not going
to
be.
Okay, so we only got 2 minutes left. You can believe it. But if you're walking to your car, because you know what? I have to go to the office and grab one thing, and you slip, that's workers.
Well, that's going to be very interesting, okay? Because you're within the course and scope of your employment, working now from home, and now you need to go to the office to get
a file.
That's going to be very interesting. I think that would be found non-compensable.
Okay.
Okay, because now once you left that your home, got in your car, and you're driving to the office. So if I'm driving to the office tomorrow and I get in a car accident, not workers' comp. The argument could only be this. I'm Steve Matarazzo. I'm in the office. I have an office in here in Cherry Hill. I got an office in my home, and I work in both places, and I'm working in the car, and I'm returning calls, and I'm dictating occasionally, hands-free, of course, and could that be argued to be the course and scope? Yeah, but that would be, you know, very unusual.
So let's do this. Let's go. Let's as we roll out. First of all, I want to thank Judge Henson for being our guest, and of course, Steve Matarazzo, our host for the broadcast. Always extremely entertaining and dynamic. But having said that, Michelle Matarazzo, do you have the contact information here at the firm if somebody gets injured and needs to call and get a consultation or wants to get representation?
So the main number is 856-843-8403. When clients call and I do an intake, I give them my cell phone number.
What about the website?
My email, mmatarazzo@mlworkerscomplaw.com.
And it's mlworkerscomplaw.com, which is the website. Well, listen, I want to thank Steve Matarazzo. Of course, What's that?
I just wanted to say one thing.
Go ahead, please.
So I want to give a shout out to my sister.
Awesome.
She is a family law lawyer, and she's the one you said, how did I know how to do everything? She opened up her own law firm a good 25, 30 years ago, and I used a lot of her contacts.
Really?
To
What's her name, by the way?
Karen Ulmer.
Awesome.
Ulmer Law.
Shout out to Ulmer Law. Steve Matarazzo, thank you so much. As usual, very dynamic conversation. Hopefully next month we'll be sitting here talking about the miracle of the Eagles winning the Super Bowl.
27-21 yeah. Tampa.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Brad Henson, Judge Henson, thank you so much.
For my pleasure.
And, of course, the boss, Michelle Matarazzo. Is that what they refer? I mean, I'm assuming that, right?
Comptroller.
That's right. Comptroller. And, of course, to Steve Loubser. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for joining us, everyone.